the Financial Sense Midweek Edition with Jim Poplava. Delving in-depth with authors and experts into the key economic issues.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplava, and welcome to this week's edition of Lifetime Income.
And greetings, everybody. I'm John Loeffler. And if you remember from last week's program, we are now dividing Lifetime Income. We've actually have two shows every single week on Monday and Tuesday. And coming up later in this program, we'll tell you who the guest is tomorrow. It's something you're not going to want to miss. Speaking of not missing things, before we get into today's topic, Jim, why don't you tell everybody about your investment strategy seminar, which is coming up on November 7th, which isn't too far away.
Yeah, this is probably the first time we're going to open this up to the public. It'll be on November 7th. It's pretty much an all-day event. We're going to take a look at our strategies that we see for the final phase of the bull market. As many of you know that listen to the weekend program, we're not in the recession camp, nor are we in the bear market camp. So we're going to be making our case where we think things are likely to unfold, everything from Fed strategy, what's going on internationally, and also in terms of how to play the final phase of a bull market, which sometimes can be the most explosive. All that's going to be coming up, and plus we're going to cover some tax and financial planning updates. There was a major tax law in 2012, John, that affected trust and so many things that people aren't aware of, everything from Obamacare in 2010 to the Tax Reform Act of 2012. We'll be touching upon that in the final hour along with Q&A. That's coming up on November 7th here in beautiful San Diego. So if you're on the East Coast and you're shoveling snow, you might want to think, well, there's a nice warm place to be this time of the year. That's coming up on the 7th.
And if people want more information, will it be on the website or...
It's on the website, or they can call our toll-free number, which is 888-486-3939.
888-486-3939, or go to our website, financialsense.com, financialsense.com. Okay, over the last several months, we have spent considerable time here on Lifetime Income covering the issues of Social Security and Medicare. These are big issues for people planning their retirement or in retirement. It is not starting to be picked up in the news. I mean, some of the radical changes that are going on right now, Medicare premiums are going up, and they're going up dramatically over the balance of this decade. Now, there have been several points we wanted to make, which helps you to understand your Social Security benefits. It could make the difference for you of hundreds of thousands of dollars over your lifetime. And secondly, why this is all important, because your Medicare premiums are going up. They are deducted from your Social Security check. And so the higher your Social Security check is, the better off you are to handle the higher Medicare premiums that are coming your way. Now, today on the show, we're going to complete this theme by covering Medicare insurance policies. There are over 10 different kinds of policies, so it's not easy to wade through this, but it can be done. Sometimes you might think it's more like a minefield. So, Jim, there are the mines out there. We're going to go through it. Where do we begin?
You know, typical of the government, they regulate Medigap insurance is what it's referred to. There's almost 14 policies out there. Two of them have been phased out. But John, before we get to Medigap insurance policies, let's talk about what Medicare covers. Now, according to the American Journal of Law and Medicine, Medicare pays only 59% of the average healthcare cost for the average American senior. Think about that, only 59%. They estimate also, because this changed as a result of the 2003 legislation, where they began to price Medicare premiums based on income brackets. So according to the journal, if you make between $85,000 and $170,000, you will spend on average $8,000 a year on routine medical expenses each year. And the Kaiser Foundation stepped in and they said in their study, based on these figures go back to 2010 and premiums are up about 57% since then, the average senior will spend $4,734 out of their own pockets for healthcare spending. Now, this includes not only the premiums you pay for Medicare, but other things like supplemental insurance. So we've always covered on this program that medical care is an important part of your budget when you retire. And most people don't plan for it. And we talk about how you can break up expenses during retirement into three phases. The first phase, when you first retire, expenses are usually on the high side. You're doing all your travel, you're taking up hobbies, and then you sort of settle down into that middle period of your retirement. And then finally, the final phase of retirement, that's when you start running, you know, you're in your 70s, you start running into these higher medical costs that can become substantial. And depending on which survey that you're looking at, the average couple could spend anywhere from $230,000 to $250,000 out of pocket for their medical expenses during their retirement years, which lines up more with the American Journal of Law and Medicine, which says that the average senior will spend about $8,000. That's just about right with those figures that we talk about over the lifetime of your retirement.
Now, we covered this pretty extensively on last week's program, that these costs are going to rise dramatically, depending on your income, of course, because they're income related. And by 2019, monthly premium costs are going to rise. Now, if you're on the low end, it'll go from approximately $104 to $212 a month. On the high end, from $335 to $512 per month. So not only, and this is important, there are two things here. This is a double-edged sword. So not only are Medicare premiums going up, but your out-of-pocket costs are going to go up as well. And if these transfer to your secondary carrier, those premiums are going to go up to try to cover the increase that those companies are having to bear as well. So the reason why we're going to be covering Medicare insurance policies here today is because of all of this, so that you understand, you know what's coming, and it doesn't catch you by surprise.
Yeah, as we've discussed, each year, your out-of-pocket costs, from premiums to gaps in coverage to co-payments, co-insurance. So you're going to need to purchase what we call a Medigap insurance policy. What it does, it fills the gap between what Medicare covers and what you end up actually paying. I mean, there's 14 policies out there, but there's basically about 10 that have been standardized policies that you can choose from depending on your health and your budget. Now, here's some good news. The federal government regulates Medigap insurance policies. The policies themselves are still offered by the private sector companies. So even though the benefits have been standardized, the cost of a standard policy varies widely from company to company. They're all over the map. So not only must you choose which benefit plan best suits your needs, but also which company offers the best price.
Okay, speaking of best price, how do you choose the right policy? I mean, this for me has always been a big bugaboo whenever I've been dealing not just with Medicare, but with other policies. And I've gone around and around with my agent on this about how difficult it is to actually understand what the policy is going to pay and to read through all of the doublespeak. So there are so many to choose from right now, and it really does make it very, very confusing. So how do you pick one?
Well, I mean, there's basically 14 plans out there from A to N. But several of them have gone away, such as plans I and J, which were phased out after 2010. Now, if you take these policies, the Medigap plans are designated by letters. Each plan covers a variation and a percentage. There's five basic things that they cover. Number one, hospital coinsurance. That's the Part A you don't pay for. Under Medicare, they don't cover everything. There's a big deductible. Number two, after Medicare covers, I think, so many days, like 20 days in a hospital, 365 days of hospital coverage after Medicare runs out of hospital coverage. That's the Part A. Some or all of Part B coinsurance. That's the part you pay for seeing a doctor. Hospice benefit and medical coverage when traveling abroad. Those are the sort of five standard things that you're going to find in each Medigap policy. Whether they cover all of it or part of it varies with each plan. What you get in each plan, and once again, there's 14 of them, two of them are being phased out, from A to N, that's how you refer to these plans. I got a plan A, I got a plan B, a C, all the way to M and N. Who knows, John, over time we may get the whole alphabet into here. But, you know, they keep adding a couple more. But they're all going to have some kind of variation of those five basic principles. Now, understand this. It's like anything else that you get insurance for. The greater the coverage, the higher the cost.
Well, now, you have all these plans from A to N. Are there any that tend to stand out as being popular, like people wind up on them more often than not?
Yeah, by far, I mean, if you look at it, Medigap F policy is by far probably the most popular. According to a survey, 55% of Medicare enrollees are in this particular policy. The second one is probably Plan C policies are probably the next most popular policies purchased. And then we just introduced, over the last couple of years, the government and private sector has introduced two new plans called M and N. They're just too new right now to get some real percentages. But once again, 10,000 baby boomers retiring every day here. So we'll get some data. The difference on M&N is rather than covering 100% of a particular benefit, they cover everything from 50% to 75%. So if you don't want to spend a whole bunch of money, maybe you have the means. They've introduced the M&N plans.
Okay. There's no chocolate attached to that, by the way. That's what it sounds like.
M&M.
All right. Well, since we're talking about popular plans, I mean, who's not popular with chocolate, right? What do these plans cover? Let's pick a couple of the most popular ones and look at them.
Well, to understand the popularity, you need to talk about what seniors value the most in their Medigap policies. And they did a study. What were the three most important factors in terms of coverage? Top of the list, number one, is any plan, insurance company that allows you to see the doctor of your choice. You don't want a gatekeeper. If you have a doctor you're working with or a specialist that you need, you don't want to have some gatekeeper come in and say, no, you can't see that person. So being able to see the doctor you choose is number one. Number two, coverage of hospital expenses not covered by Medicare. Anybody that's had a serious illness in a hospital, you know that those charges can add up very quickly. Number three, and this is important as well, is since Medicare doesn't cover the full expense of seeing a doctor, the third most popular thing is coverage of physician expenses not covered by Medicare. Now, those are the three most important. Those are probably the top three concerns and preferences. Now, let's go to Medigap Plan F. This is considered by the industry to be the Cadillac of all policies because of the broad array of coverage. And let's list the things that it covers. It covers Part A inpatient hospital deductible. Right now, on Part A, your deductible in a hospital is $1,260. It covers skilled nursing care of roughly $158 a day after days 20, from days 21 to 100 when Medicare doesn't cover that. It covers Part B deductible per calendar year. Right now, that's $147. And it also covers 80% of any medical expenses incurred if, let's say, you're traveling. You're in Europe, something happens, you have to go to a medical facility. It covers 80% because what do? A lot of seniors spend a lot of time traveling in their retirement. And finally, the fifth one, coverage for 100% of Part B excess charges. This essentially covers, John, 100% of what a doctor actually charges you above what Medicare actually is approved. Your doctor may charge, let's just round it off and say $100 for a visit. Medicare only covers maybe $60. Well, the $40 that the doctor needs to get paid, that's when your policy would cover that $40. So this is why it's called the Cadillac. It covers all the three concerns that we talked about, seeing the doctor of your choice, hospital expenses, and physician expenses. And that's why they call it the Cadillac.
You know, it seems like if this is a Cadillac program, that automatically sets up a little flag, like this is going to be pretty expensive.
Well, I mean, they do have Medigap Plan Fs that have a higher deductible option that can be bought, which can lower the cost. It's just like, you know, if you get car insurance, if you have a high deductible, or if you're working today, a lot of companies' medical costs have gone up 57% after the passage of Obamacare. A lot of companies, in order to afford to provide medical insurance for employees, are getting policies with higher deductibles. So you can get a Plan F with a higher deductible, and that is something that can help lower the cost.
Okay, now what about the other policies? I mean, there are so many of them. If we had to highlight another one as being popular and really worth it, which one would you pick?
The second most popular, according to studies, is Medigap Plan C. It does a number of things. It covers Part A inpatient deductible, which is, once again, that $1,260 per year. It covers skilled nursing care, the $158 a day between days 21 and 100. It covers the Medicare Part B plan deductible, which is $147, and covers 80% of the cost of medical care overseas. There is a $50,000 lifetime maximum benefit on that if you are traveling overseas. It's probably the second most popular plan. And then a couple other ones I want to cover briefly here because there's so many of these things. Like I said, in terms of the alphabet, Medigap plans start with the letter A, and we're now up to the letter N. Now, Medicare Plan L, M, and N are basically covering these same areas, but in order to keep the premiums down, they're saying, we're not going to cover 100% of it. We're going to cover a percent of it. Medigap L plans cover 75% of things like Part A hospital insurance, that $1,260. They would cover 75% of it. They would cover 75% of the copayment on Part B. They add also 75% of the cost of 3 pints of blood. They also cover 75% of the Part A deductible, hospice, etc. Plan M, on the other hand, covers 50% of the hospital deductible, and they cover 100% of the Medicare Part B deductible, and Plan M covers everything on top of that. And then, of course, you have Plan N, which basically is a per payment out of pocket. It limits it. Hospital ER visit, copay, $50. It covers the Medicare deductible Part B of $147. And for doctor visits, which is Part B, you have to pay a $20 out of pocket. So what they've tried to do, John, is add a number of different kind of plans that are saying, well, depending on your budget, depending on your health, they vary all over the place. But once again, the two most popular are Plan F, that's considered the Cadillac, Plan C. And then recently, they've introduced three new policies, LMN, which basically covers a percentage, a 75% on M, 50% on M, and then a fixed cost on the N plan.
You know what may be confusing here? If the plans are basically standardized, then why do we see so many variations when it comes to cost?
The reason is the price varies because it depends on how the company prices the policy. And there's three basic approaches. Now, the plans are regulated, but in terms of pricing, the companies can determine pricing, and there's three methods that they do to do that. And I want to give a warning on one of them. One is issue age. This method prices the premiums and any future increases at the age when the policy was issued. Obviously, if you get Medicare at age 65, the premium is going to be lower than, let's say, you continue to work, you're covered under a policy at the place you work, and you retire at age 70. Well, if you take out a policy at age 70, it's obviously going to be more expensive than age 65. Now, here's the other one. The second approach is called the attain age, and it's based on current age at the time of the increase. So the premium can increase as you get older. And then the third, and it's only available in around 8 states, it's called community age. And basically, what an insurance company does, let's say, you live in Phoenix, Arizona. They say, well, for the average person that lives in Phoenix, Arizona, that's retired and on Medicare, this is the average expense. So it's determined more on a community rather than, let's say, your age. Now, I want to issue a warning here on the attain age. The attained age is real popular because it initially results in a lower premium, usually the lowest premium starting out. Now, think of it like term insurance, because down the road, you know, as you get older, if you have a term policy, those premiums are going to go up. These kind of policies based on attained age, you may initially get a lower premium when you start out, but as you get older, those premiums are going to skyrocket and come back to bite you later on.
Okay, the issue always comes up of enrollment. Now, I'm assuming when you sign up, obviously, for these policies, you have an enrollment period. But what about later on? Say you go, oh, I'd rather switch to this other plan. Can I just do it any time? Do I have to do it at a particular time? Or how do you do that?
When you sign up for policies, you can basically sign up for a policy at any time, but companies selling Medigap can refuse to sell a policy due to pre-existing conditions. But there are times that regardless of your pre-existing condition, this is something that came in with government regulations, companies must sell Medigap policies regardless. And that is, these times are open enrollment periods. And the other time is basically guaranteed issue. Now, open enrollment periods basically is when you apply for, let's say, Medicare, and then guaranteed issue applies to, let's say, a beneficiary may have, let's say you lose your coverage. Let's say you're age 66, you're working for a company at age 67, you retire because of health issues or whatever reason, that's the guaranteed issue. So there's a couple times that you can get, doesn't matter what your condition is, they have to sell you a policy.
Okay, so if you are close to filing for Medicare and you're going to need Medigap insurance, when do you begin choosing these policies?
You know, there are three steps I recommend when you're looking at Medigap insurance. Step one is estimate the price of Medigap Plan F. As we mentioned, that's sort of the Cadillac. You know, think of it as shopping for a car. If you could have a Cadillac, boy, it'd be really nice versus an economy car. So you start out with Plan F, and you use this policy sort of as your benchmark. Now, keep in mind, it doesn't include drug coverage, so you might have to go to Part D, but you need to find the price based on your age and geographic region, because depending on your age and where you live, those prices can vary all over the place from state to state, even to geographic regions within a state. Now, once you know this cost, you can then begin to compare prices of plans that maybe don't offer as much or don't cover as much, but essentially you determine, you know, at that point, okay, if I can afford a Cadillac, here's the price. If you can't afford the Cadillac, what compromises are you willing to make based on, let's say, your budget and, let's say, your own health conditions?
Why don't you just, pick Plan F if that's the good plan and stick with it? Is that feasible?
Well, I mean, for some people, you may not be able to afford the policy, which leads me to step two. And this is identify selection criteria. Now, if the beneficiary wants to consider less expensive options than, let's say, the comprehensive Medigap policy that we talked about in Plan F, usually what you want to do is list maybe two or three option criteria that's really important to you. And just based on studies that have been done, the most important thing that has been listed as an option is, number one, the ability to continue seeing your current physician. Number two, flexibility in choosing providers, particularly specialists, without going through some kind of what we call gatekeeper. Low total cost when you're looking at premiums and deductibles, protection from large losses, especially on the hospital expense side, and benefits for other services such as dental and vision. So these, John, are probably some of the most important ones that are probably out there. But start with Plan F and then take a look at that cost and then decide, okay, maybe I can't afford it. You got a couple options. You can get a Plan F with a higher deductible to bring down the cost, or you can look at other plans like Plan C, which is second most popular. You can look at some of the new ones, L, M, and N, which cover a percentage. So there are a number of steps that you can do.
Now, did we miss any steps?
No, basically, what you really want to do here is start out with the Cadillac and then make a side-by-side comparison, whether it's Plan C, which is the second most popular, or the ones that cover a percentage like plans L and M, or a fixed cost like N. That's probably the best place to start out.
All right, if we sum all of this up, let's put some steps together here just to ping in people's minds what has to happen. First of all, remember that Social Security and Medicare are related to each other. You want to begin with Social Security. Oftentimes, this is a joint decision between you and your spouse. Maximize your benefits. That's step number one. Number two, as far as Medicare goes, sign up and know the types of traditional Part A, Part B, Part C, Advantage plans, Part D, and if not covered, Part C. Number three, when you're choosing a Medigap policy, study your options, compare it to the best plan out there, which is Plan F, which you may or may not be able to afford, but that gives you some kind of a benchmark to see everything, and then you work backwards from there, looking at some of the other plans that you could afford that would satisfy your healthcare needs, or some compromises that you might want to make in there, and some of the options that would fit your personal needs based on your health history and your current health and your financial status. I want to remind you that tomorrow on the program, our guest, remember, Lifetime Income is now a two-day event every single week. Tomorrow on the program, Sarah Ballantyne will be with us, The Paleo Approach. This book, Jim, considers to be the Bible of the paleo diet, with which a lot of people are actually losing weight, which has always been my challenge to physicians when they tell you, well, you know, you need to lose weight. And I will ask them, well, okay, good, give me a diet that works. And they always get very quiet because they don't seem to have answers for that. The paleo is one of them that does work.
Yeah, I'm really excited about this interview. I read the book. I've had several authors here on the program with the paleo diet. Sarah takes it a step further, and in my estimation, this book has now become the Bible. She gets into the first two chapters. You're going to have to get through it, but it gives you the medical reasons of why it works. What happens when you have a poor diet? What it changes, and how your diet is a major factor behind most of the diseases that we suffer from today, whether it's heart disease, cancer, diabetes, the big killers out there. And she gets into what happens to your immune system, which is primarily your gut. And so, quite honestly, folks, this is probably the best book I've read out there. You're really going to love this interview. So I hope you'll be staying tuned to part two of Lifetime Income when we get into interviewing Dr. Sarah Ballantyne.
Tomorrow here on Lifetime Income. Also, don't forget Jim's Investment Strategy Conference coming up on November 7th. And for more information, you can go to the website here at financialsense.com. Now, what we do every single week to illustrate the topics which we have been discussing, I'm sure if you've listened to the program, you know what it is. We do a real life case study where the study is actually something that actually happened with real people, but we do change their names to protect their privacy. So who are the people on the docket this week and what was their situation?
This week, we're going to talk with Bob and Janet Turner. Bob was age 69. One of the major concerns here is he had diabetes, and he also had a heart condition, had a heart attack. And so there were some real health issues here that were a major concern to Bob. His wife, Janet, was age 62, longevity running in the family. Janet's mother, 85. Her dad was age 89, so we really had longevity. So we not only had a 7-year age difference between, let's say, Bob and Janet, but also making it more serious, Bob had serious medical issues that he was dealing with, and Janet had longevity. Now, Bob was a retired corporate executive. They had 3 children, all girls, 2 struggling financially. We'll talk about that. Bob's main concern was health. Obviously, age 69 with diabetes and heart disease, the age difference, he wanted to make sure his wife, Janet, was taken care of. In Janet's case, she had no interest in the stock market, no interest in investments. And basically, Bob's concern was if something happened to him, that she would be taken care of. So as we look at the particulars, the good news here is he was very successful as a corporate executive. Bob's Social Security was roughly $2,500 a month. That would be important because should something happen to Bob, that would be the Social Security that Janet would take. He had roughly about $2 million in an IRA rollover, most of that coming from a profit sharing and 401k plan that he participated at the company worked for. He had $3 million in the company stock that the company worked for. That had roughly about a 2% dividend. Huge, huge capital gains in that. Plus, the dividend was going up each year. And we didn't want to sell that because living here in California, that would put him in roughly a 24% capital gains bracket on the federal side and 13 on California. So you're talking about 37% in taxes. If we sold the tax on the gain, there was well over almost $2 million in capital gains on that. And he had roughly about $1.3 million in mutual funds. Now, the key thing here in this case is he sort of wanted to put things in a very secure position for a couple of reasons. Number one, didn't want his wife to worry about it. He didn't want anything like fluctuations in the market, what happened in 2000. Because he worked at a tech company, everybody knows what happened to tech stocks during that period of time. And then also the financial crisis. So didn't want his wife worried on income, which is one of the reasons why he was attracted to our approach to individual bonds and stocks, because a lot of his stuff other than the company stock he owned was mainly in mutual funds. So we wanted Janet to be secure and not worry about money. Secondly, it just didn't make sense to sell the company stock until basically Bob died. And the reason being, here in California, being a community property state, at Bob's death, all of the capital gains on that stock would be forgiven. So in this case, let's say Bob passes away, the market value of the stock becomes the new cost basis to Janet. So in essence, we would save well over $700,000 in capital gains taxes at the federal and state level. Since it was already paying a dividend of 2%, they weren't short of income. The plan was to keep the company stock until basically Bob passed away. Now, what we did is we set up a laddered muni bond portfolio with the money that was in mutual funds. That was roughly about $1.3 million with a tax-free yield of 3%. And also, we took the IRA portfolio. We put that in laddered bonds, 60%, 40% in dividend-paying stocks, blue-chip stocks that you wouldn't lose sleep. And the reason we did this, once again, with the laddered bond portfolio, the income would be predictable. We know exactly what would happen when a bond matures. And his wife, Janet, wouldn't have to worry about what would happen to her income, for example, if she was in ETFs or mutual funds. And so Bob's main concern here is he wanted something as much as possible on an automatic pilot. So Janet, you know, they were avid golfers, didn't want Janet to worry if we went into another recession or bear market, what would happen to her lifestyle or income. And also, another thing that would happen, and it happens to many retired couples, when one spouse passes away, the surviving spouse becomes a single taxpayer, goes into the higher tax bracket. So, where we are right now, basically, Bob's Social Security income was about $30,000 a year. The company's stock was producing dividends around 2% of $60,000 a year. The municipal bond portfolio we put together was $39,000 tax-free, so the total income was $129,000. We also recommended that basically Bob begin to draw down some of his IRA income each year, not wait to age 70 and a half. Originally, Bob was thinking, I'll just let the IRA accumulate. I don't need it. And at age 70 and a half, of course, he'd have to start taking out. But the idea was to build up the IRA so Janet would have more income to live on should he predecease her. What we said is, look, if you continue to just let that accumulate, this is going to be a giant amount of money. You're going to have to take mandatory distributions. It's going to put you in a higher tax bracket, more so if you pass on and your wife is a single taxpayer. So we began to draw down roughly about $40,000 out of the IRA, in which case we would build up the muni bond portfolio. Now, the municipals, the tax-free bonds from the personal side, allowed us to take out this money at a lower bracket because the stock, basically, his company's stock, the $60,000 in dividends, were taxed at a 15% lower bracket. The munis would be tax-free, so there's no tax there. Roughly 85% of his Social Security at $30,000 would be taxable. Now, the idea that we wanted here is predictable income, so Janet wouldn't have to worry. And upon Bob's death, we would move out of part of that stock, the $3 million in the company's stock. We would pare that back roughly by two-thirds. We'd be building up the tax-free bond portfolio. A couple other things that we did is we changed the IRA beneficiaries on his IRA rollover to an IRA stretch. Originally, he had the beneficiary, his wife, and the trust as the beneficiary. By doing the IRA stretch with his children, they wouldn't be all taxable on, let's say, Janet's death. And in effect, we were creating a pension for his kids, two of them, which were struggling financially, so they would inherit that IRA, and they would take it out over their lifetime at their tax expense. And so basically, we would also not only take care of Janet, but we were also going to take care of two of his daughters.
So once again, another successful case. And again, we would remind you that tomorrow, Sarah Ballantyne is going to be on about the paleo approach. This is really important. A lot of people have diseases. I really believe nutrition is really the key to a lot of diseases, avoiding them to start with and to getting rid of them if you have them. And paleo approach is one way to do that. And don't forget that Jim has an investment strategy seminar coming up on November 7th. You can get more information about that at our website at financialsense.com.
And by the way, John, Bob is on the paleo approach diet. He's lost over 30 pounds, and it's making a difference in terms of his medication and his health. His blood chemistry levels are looking much better. So hopefully Bob is going to live a long, productive life. Well, we've run out of time as usual. Tomorrow we'll be running that interview with Sarah Ballantyne. It really is, I consider, to be the Bible of the paleo approach. I hope you'll enjoy that interview. In the meantime, until you and I speak again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSN. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.